At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, at least it wasn't a three-game series.
I was just thinking the exact same thing.
Chris Rodgers, Randy Carrick on the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and the Cardinals did lose two in a row to the Oakland Athletics, who are a really good team and are gunning for another playoff berth in the American League. That it's not a disaster to go to Oakland and lose a couple of games.
No, I mean, it's not like going up against the Cubs, being in Wrigley Field, or facing the Brewers and losing a couple of games. So, yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a silver lining to losing two games, that's it. The bad news is they have fallen out of first place. They are a game and a half back of the Cubs right now. And I kind of envision that for the remainder of the season, we might seesaw here a little bit. Maybe change places with the Cubs.
Yeah, when the Cubs are on the road.
Yeah, when they go on the road again. If they can't figure out their road problems, then that will leave the door open for the Cardinals. And that's the thing that's been, I think, maybe there are a bunch of different ways you could describe this. One of them is disappointing, that the Cardinals have not been able to totally take advantage of the fact the Cubs are just not a great team this year. They're not playing nearly as well as they should, even though they just swept their series against Milwaukee. Still, they have left the door open for the Cardinals, who have not been able to take advantage in a big way.
And the Cardinals had a rough go of it, Dakota Hudson specifically, on Saturday night in an 8-3 loss to the A's.
Line drive, center field, base hit in front of Fowler. Grossman scores, Chapman scores, Canna comes through with a two-out, two-run single, and the A's lead 2-0. Pretty well hit to left. Ozuna backs up, squares up. He's got it. Both runners are going to tag. Everybody's going to move up, and that's a sacrifice fly as Herman comes in to score. So the A's lead 3-0. Swing and a miss to the backstop, and hustling home is Simeon, and he comes in to score. So the A's get their fourth run on a wild pitch.
So four runs, three of them earned. Dakota Hudson went 3 2/3, struck out 7, but he walked 5, and you just can't do that in 3 2/3 through 93 pitches. And the ordinarily reliable Hudson let the Cardinals down, and they were never headed in that game.
No, and that's, again, it highlights the pitching problems and what our concerns going up to the trade deadline were. Got to get another starter in that rotation to be able to get you some meaningful innings in the last couple of months of the season. And with the exception of Miles Michaelis, who did it last year, and you expect Jack Flaherty to give you close to 200 innings, you don't really know about everybody else. Even though Hudson has been really good for most of this season, at some point there's going to be a time where maybe he hits a wall, just because this is the first time he's thrown this many innings. This is the first time he's done it, certainly at the big league level. So that's where the concern really comes in, and it just kind of highlights that. But he has been overall very good for the Cardinals this year.
Now, last week, we talked about it on Monday because I wrote about it at 101ESPN.com. On Sunday, I thought that the Cardinals should pursue a guy like Tanner Roark. He's a guy that delivers innings, and lo and behold, yesterday, he gives 5 innings, only 1 run allowed to the Cardinals as he won it for Oakland.
Pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. 95 miles an hour on the outer half. Carpenter gets called out on strikes. And he got him swinging. High fastball. Carpenter strikes out. And he got him swinging. So Roark works a little overtime, but when it's all said and done, the Cardinals leave the bases loaded.
Incredibly inefficient. He did strike out 6 and walk 2 through 109 pitches in 5 innings, but that was enough for Oakland because Yusmeiro Petit came on and then Trinan. Diekman, Sona, and then Hendricks closed it out, and Oakland won yesterday's game 4-2.
Tanner Roark, going back to 2016, 210 innings pitched, then 181, 180 the following season. Right now he's at 115. So he's going to give them, he's going to give Oakland a decent amount of innings, but overall this season he's going to throw pretty deep into the year and give a lot of work. And the Cardinals, that's kind of what they're missing, is workload from the starting rotation. Now, you can talk about whether or not he would have made their chances a ton better. Probably getting to the postseason, I would say yes. I'd say he helps them a lot. I don't know what happens if the playoffs start and the Cardinals are in and he's part of your rotation, but this team needed some kind of bump. They needed some sort of assistance going down the final 2 months of the season with that rotation. They didn't get it.
And it is an apples-to-apples comparison because he actually did get traded. We'll never know whether or not the Mets, who, by the way, have won 9 of 10, were really going to trade Zach Wheeler, or were they just asking for something that the Cardinals weren't prepared to pay because there was more than either of the outfielders that apparently were asked. But we do know that Tanner Roark got traded, and we do know that the Cardinals have people in their system that are better than what Cincinnati got back for him.
And so you just kind of have to hope this doesn't end up biting you by the end of the year. And I have a feeling it might. And I think a lot of people watching this team this year feel the same way.
Meanwhile, college football is back, and that means so is Mike Leach.
Yeah, so for the pockets.
Yeah,
you always have pockets. I don't understand those nylon shorts. You know, you jog around and your stuff flaps all over the place. I've never liked those.
How many pairs of cargo shorts do you have?
Difficult to say, because now it's gotten to where they'll give them to me, or Nike will say, here, check these ones out, type of thing.
You know, Mike Leach knows what he's doing.
He's got cargo shorts, lots of them.
He loves cargo shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that. You live, Mike Leach. But I'm going to tell you something. That may be the worst thing about college football being out of season, is we don't get to hear from Mike Leach for several months. I'm not a big fan of that. I want this man on television every day. I want him on radio every day. I want to hear from Mike Leach at least once a week.
I think he needs a bigger platform than Washington State and the Pac-12. I think it would have been nice if he would have gotten that SEC job, that Tennessee job, because that would have provided him a platform so that you could have heard him a lot more.
He's the best. He's ridiculous, and I know he knows what he's doing. I don't think he's insane, right? Because you could listen to him and not know much about him and think, well, this guy's crazy. Why is he going off about cargo shorts here for the next 5 minutes? But I think he knows that he's playing a part, and he's very good at it.
He really is.
I love it.
The Tigers of Mizzou will open up their season on the last day of this month. I had a chance to get over to Columbia yesterday for practice, and it's a confident group, Ronj, and obviously with the stretch run that they had last year, they should be confident with the fact that they have a quarterback that played in the national championship game the year before last. They should be confident. They bring back 13 starters, 7 on offense, 6 on defense. That should make them confident. They have stability in their coaching staff. There's a lot of reasons for Mizzou's football team, not the least of which is their new locker room, to feel good about themselves.
Could very easily see this team with 9 or 10 wins going into this year. And it's the entire season, until we have some kind of resolution with the ban and with the appeal of that ban, there's going to be that cloud hanging over the team. Maybe not from their perspective. They probably aren't thinking about it on a daily basis, but I think Mizzou fans will. They'll know this team has a chance of being really good and might get shut out of a bowl because of some ridiculous decision that was made a few months ago. So until we find out more about that, and hopefully it's relatively soon, though, don't they say it could take into November before they make some kind of decision here? That's not ideal. You'd hope they get this done quicker. But what a disappointment for a team to have the promise it does going into the regular season, and at this point, know that you're probably not going to get a chance to go to a bowl because of something silly that happened.
Cardinals are at L.A. to open a 3-game series tonight, 9:10, so an 8:30 pregame on FS Midwest, and Brad Thompson will join Dan McLaughlin for the call in L.A., and we're going to talk to BT later in the show, if I'm not mistaken. Is that
correct?
Yes,
we are.
How about that? That's pretty exciting. It says it right here on the sheet.
4:15.
4:15.
Stay tuned.
We're going to talk to BT. There's Big Sizz. He had a good weekend.
Oh, yeah, he did have a good weekend. He went to a winery.
Yeah.
I don't know with whom, but he went.
Just did some whining. And don't forget, we want your reaction with the Mic Drop feature all day long. Use your 101 ESPN app and the Mic Drop feature here at 101 ESPN. The Cardinals got Matt Carpenter back yesterday, and just like that, he was back in the leadoff spot. We'll talk about that, his rehab stint, and much more next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. You heard from Marp and you heard from Mike Schilt, the Cardinals skipper. Yesterday, Marp was the leadoff man for the Cardinals. It's not like they've been getting great work out of their leadoff men with him out of the lineup. And Twitter was ablaze with anger because of Marp's presence in the lineup. But the way things are going, it's 6 1/2 dozen to the other. Really doesn't matter.
Yeah. What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. If you put Tommy Edman in there, he's going to do the same thing, right?
Yeah, it's not like they've got a whole bunch of great options on the team right now to take that spot. And historically he's been really good there. Maybe coming back from being off for some time, mm-hmm. maybe that will help get him going. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a little bit too optimistic in this, but I think you're right. The underlying problem here is they just haven't had a whole lot of great options there.
And Mark feels like he knows his swing and feels like that what he did at both Springfield and Memphis benefited him.
Results were really the last thing on my mind going down there. I mean, I was working on things. I wanted to come back feeling strong and feeling like I had my swing where I wanted. So, you know, early on, getting time and getting at bats, and the numbers for me don't really matter, and they're not really indicative of what was happening. I was having good at bats and putting together what I felt like is getting myself closer to the swing that I've had my whole career, and you know, looking to carry that over, you know, starting today.
And hopefully that translates to the major league level, that he gets that ability to take a walk, he gets that ability to hit the ball hard back that he didn't have for the first 100 games of the year.
Right, and I guess it doesn't really matter that he went 2-for-26 in his rehab stint. That doesn't it doesn't necessarily predict what he's going to do here in the last 2 months of the season. What is a greater predictor might be what he did leading up to it. You know, leading up to the injury and then the rehab stint, the way he played going into those times. I don't know. I mean, it's just it's totally possible he just flips the switch here in August and he really does start making good contact, something he was not doing earlier in the season. And again, we've brought this up before. There were people who were paying close attention to the peripherals for Matt Carpenter yep. last year when he was struggling and who kept saying, you know what? He's not getting the results right now, but keep watching because eventually they're going to come. He is making solid contact, and then that eventually came. And he had a really strong month and a half, 2 months, and kind of put himself in an MVP conversation for a while because he was hitting so well. That isn't there this year, though. None of that hard contact, exit velocity, none of that stuff has been there so far. So there's, if you want to look at the body of work this year, there's not a whole lot to be encouraged about. But that doesn't mean he can't just flip the switch now that he's back.
And Schilt echoed what I said. He said, even though Carp has not been, and he doesn't know his nickname yet, by the way, Schilt doesn't.
It's still Marp.
Even though Marp has not been what he or we feel like he's capable of this season, he's still been as productive as anybody we've had in that spot. If you look at the raw sheer numbers, it's harder to take the emotion out of it for some people. I get that. But if you just look at it and you go even with what he's not at, when he's not at his best, he's just been more representative for that spot. In this game of numbers, which is real, that matters. And Schilt is 100% right. Cardinal leadoff hitters this year hitting .204 with a .289 on base. .204 with a .289 on base. And Carpenter this year is better than that. So he's been better than the other guys. And that's not saying much, but he's been better than the other guys that have been in that spot.
No, it's not really encouraging to hear. Well, everybody else sucks there too, so don't get too upset about this. And that's essentially what it comes down to. He's right, though. I mean, if you look at what he's saying strictly by the letter of what he's saying, yeah, Matt Carpenter is just as good as everybody else that's batted there this season. Doesn't really say a whole lot. And by the way, you did mention those numbers. That is worse than the National League from the leadoff position this year.
By a wide margin, I would think. I would think that the Cardinals have the worst numbers in the National League at the leadoff spot.
They certainly do. Let's see. The next worst from the leadoff spot is the Cubs, who hit .216 as a team. The Cardinals hitting .204. Let's take a look at the OPS here.
.625,
which is, 50 points worse than what the Giants are.
It's pretty bad. And the Cubs picked up a guy in Tony Kemp that might be the answer to their problems. So Marp says the fact that we were playing so well, this is before they played against Houston, he said, that gave me some leeway. I felt like, one, it gave me the opportunity to stay down there, and two, I wasn't going crazy knowing that we were drifting further away from our goal. If anything, we were playing as good as we have all year, so it gave me the opportunity to really just be at peace with working and know if I can get myself right, I can help us down the stretch run. That was that kind of mindset. And Derek Gould wrote that Marp would just kill himself in the cage. He said he would spend hours in the cage at Memphis and at Class AA Springfield, capitalizing on some independent study with the batting coaches there and the ability to take hundreds of swings before a minor league game, something he couldn't do at the major league level. That's from Derek Gould at STLtoday.com and in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Well, you know, I guess we can look at this positively if you want to, and it all comes back to hope, right? I think that's where this is.
It's all about hope, big boy.
Well, you know, that's where we are this point of the year. I still don't think it's in any way their biggest issue.
Leadoff hitter?
Yeah. I mean, it's not good, but I'm saying of all the reasons they've had trouble this year, I would not say leadoff hitter is their number one.
No.
Or close to their number one.
But when you talk about incremental improvement,
I totally agree with what you're about to say. Yeah. I know what you're going to say before you do it.
Can Randy Arozarena be worse? He's hitting 381 at Memphis with a 452 on base and a 1.032 OPS. He can run. He steals bases effectively. He hits for a little bit of power like Marp has out of the leadoff spot. I don't understand why they wouldn't bring Arozarena up. And whether it starts the clock or not, once again, if you're focused on winning in 2019, he would be an everyday option in your outfield.
Yes. So that the problem is that it's not a one-for-one swap Arozarena for Carpenter because they don't play the same position. So who comes out of the outfield? And I am not, with the exception of Marcell Ozuna, who has to be out there. And I think Dexter Fowler's still making a case for staying out there. But who do you sit? Jose Martinez? I'm not totally opposed to it. I like the guy. He clearly has a great time playing baseball. The team likes him. He could still be a member of this team, but he doesn't necessarily have to get starts every day. And right now, he's a league average hitter. He's not killing it like he did last year. So I don't think it'd be a huge loss if they replaced him in that way. But you still have a Matt Carpenter problem at third if you do that.
Well, you just move him down in the lineup.
You could do that,
actually,
I guess.
Based on what you have seen in the past, by the way, Marp has not been a good number two hitter. I think that might be his worst spot, worse than his numbers in the number three hole. But that would make for an interesting top three if you could get him reasonably productive in the two hole and have Arozarena, Carpenter, Goldschmidt. I would be amenable to trying that.
Yeah,
I don't know if the Cardinals will.
Well, I think at this point you kind of do whatever you can, right? I mean, they are kind of in a situation where any improvements they can get, you might as well do it. My only other concern with having Arozarena come up, and it's something we were just talking about during the break before the segment started, I don't know. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not entirely opposed to this idea. But I don't know if I really like the idea of calling the kid up and having his first big league action be a, hey, you're leading off for us, and we need your help. So, and we're in a playoff race here. We need you to do this for us right now. I don't know if I like putting him in that position.
They brought up Todd Worrell as a closer in that situation. And it worked.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, I think if he's one of their best prospects and they've got long-term hopes for him, my guess is they'd want to be more careful with using him. I'm not opposed to him being up here, but I know two things. One, he's got to play every day, and two, it may be unfair to throw him into that and say, look, we need a leadoff hitter, and we need your help immediately because we're in a playoff chase against the Cubs.
I'm 100% fine with throwing him into the fire and let him just play baseball, which he's always done.
Like I said, I'm not entirely opposed to it, but I can see why they may not want to do it.
I guarantee you there was more pressure getting out of Cuba than there will be coming up and playing for the Cardinals.
Did you ever hear the story about El Duque? El Duque in the World Series. No, I'm sorry. It was a division series against Boston. He's coming in from the bullpen. They got bases loaded, nobody out. And he got out of the jam. And he must have been talking to the young relievers. Cliff Polite was out there. Mm-hmm. Neil Kotz was out in the bullpen. And he said they all looked terrified. And the bullpen phone rang. He got up. He warmed up. And they're looking at him. Just they're shaking because they knew how big of a moment was this was. And El Duque is walking out of the door to run onto the field to go take the mound. And he says, "You guys are afraid." He's like, "Fidel Castro tried to kill my family. I'm not afraid of this." And he went out there and got, like, I think it was strikeout, pop-up or something like that. Got out of the jam.
That's the approach you got to take.
You have to.
Why not?
I guess.
Bring up another guy named Randy. That's what you need.
We could use more Randys here.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. And maybe a couple of Eds.
Yeah. 381 for Arozarena at Memphis. 452 on base, 580 slug. And by the way, if you're wondering about his entire year, because he did start at Springfield, 356 average for the year, 441 slug on base, and a 558 slug, a 999 OPS overall in the minors this year. Next up, Tom Brady got a pay raise, plus people are furious at the Blues and the FCC. That's all next in your Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. We want your mic drops with the 101 ESPN app. We're going to play a game of Say Two Nice Things, and here are the rules. You can say anything you'd like that frustrates you about the Cardinals. You can let your emotions fly. For example, putting Mark back in the leadoff spot, not bringing up Randy Arozarena, losing two crucial games in Oakland, things like that. Whatever frustrates you. However, you also have to say two nice things about the Cardinals, a player, a front office member, or coach or manager.
So something like, the Cardinals did not go and get another starting pitcher, which they desperately needed, and that is a huge mistake, and I'm really pissed at them for doing it that way. But also, the uniforms, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really nice uniforms.
And?
And great crowd.
There you go.
At the ballpark. I mean, they are getting all kinds of attendance. Did you see that, and this has been true for them, I think, the last several years, second best attendance in baseball this year behind the Dodgers.
Very nice.
Second most people have paid for tickets.
So that's what Ron's just did. That's what we want you to do. You get to rip them, but you have to say two nice things about the Cardinals, all right? The Cardinals are in L.A. tonight, 9-10 start. Michael Wacha returns to the rotation against Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers. Gonsolin 0-1 with a 5.63, so the Cardinals are going to escape having to take on one of their big boys, and we'll just wait for Kershaw tomorrow night.
So we are, I know people like measuring stick series, right? And I don't know if I necessarily care about it. We've talked about records before, our schedules before, and who you have to play. But you're facing two really good teams here in Oakland. You saw what Oakland is capable of doing. It's only a two-game series, but you still saw how good they were. And now you're facing probably the best team in baseball for a handful of games here. But we already knew that this team is not as good as those teams, but you're getting to see it up close.
Well, the Cardinals are 4-0 against the Dodgers.
They are 4-0 against them, so you never really know.
Yeah, the only National League team that's undefeated against the Dodgers this year is your St. Louis Cardinals.
So it'll be 5-0 after tonight?
You betcha it will. Wacha with 7 sensational innings.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Count me in, baby.
Yeah, people hate Michael Wacha. I don't. I think he's a nice fella.
Well, I don't hate him.
I think you do.
I don't have any hate for Michael
Wacha. I think that Stalter guy really hates him.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
I don't hate him. I just don't want him starting games.
That's reasonable.
For me right now.
There is one game being played this afternoon. The Marlins and the Mets are 1-1 in the second inning. The Mets, all of a sudden, have won 9 out of 10, and they're threatening in the wild card race, Ronj.
Baby, you've got to be kidding me there.
I thought when they didn't trade Syndergaard, I believe I said on our air, that's a pretty mean starting five that they got going right there.
Well, yeah, if they're healthy, and we've been talking about that for years, that their biggest issues have been, and when we had Wayne Randazzo on, who's the play-by-play voice of the Mets, I think he disagreed with that somewhat, that it was all about the starters and them being healthy. But I don't know how you can look at it another way. It's just they are so good. They have been so deep in that rotation. All they really needed was to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing what can happen if they do that. Right now, 5 games back in the wild card race for them.
The Mets, 3.
I'm looking at
Cardinals are a half game up on Washington and Philly. Milwaukee is 2 behind, Arizona 2.5, Giants 2.5, and the Mets 3.
I just refreshed it and it changed. Yeah, so 3 games back.
Yeah, so they win today and all of a sudden it's 2.5.
How in the hell did that happen? I just pulled this up. Like 10 minutes ago, I just pulled up the standings here on my computer, and it said five games.
I don't know.
I think I need to clear the cookies out.
Oh, that might be. By the way, I think Washington is going to be one of the wild card teams. And then the other one, Philadelphia, just is not playing well at all. I think the other one will come from among the Cardinals.
Nats and Phils. I still think Phils have a really good opportunity here.
Yeah, I just...
I mean, they're there now, but yeah. I think of all those other teams, I do not believe in the Giants. I don't care if they believe in themselves. No. I just don't.
And I don't really believe in the Brewers that much, the way things have gone over the last month and a half.
They got some pitching problems.
Yeah, they do. Will Leach wrote about one player for every team that'll still be around in 2025. And for the Cardinals, he wrote, it's either power-hitting third-base prospect or the power-hitting third-base prospect, that would be Nolan Gorman, or Paul DeJong, who's tied to the Cardinals through 2025, though it's still just tempting to say Yadier Molina.
So that would make him, let's see, that would put him at 41 or 42. He's 37 right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, no. If he's still catching games at 42, 43, awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you, my man.
And did you see, this is our final baseball note, did you see Shane Bieber had a Topps baseball card, and on the back they were doing a bio piece and said, Justin is one of the, had one of the great runs in history or something. Yeah, Justin is one of three American League pitchers to start his career with 3-8 strikeout games.
Hey,
or something
close
like
enough, man.
Yeah.
One of those guys is living the life.
Yeah. Here it is. Justin was particularly comfortable on the road where he went a team record 7-0 and was undefeated in 11 starts.
Would you rather be Justin Bieber or Shane Bieber? I think the answer is quite clear. It's Justin Bieber. Shane Bieber is great. I think pitching in the big leagues for a good team and being good at your job would be awesome. It cannot even probably compare to being Justin Bieber.
He's a rock star.
And living his life.
No doubt about it.
Man, he's got so many women, he has to have them put all their cell phones in a bag when they come hang out in this hotel. Yeah.
Jeter used to do that when they would come to his house.
Yeah, like they...
Or his apartment.
Can you imagine? It would also be kind of annoying, I think, but I would take the trade-off where you have so many people who want to hang out with you, and then you bring them back to the hotel suite, and you say, all right, ladies, everybody put your cell phone in this bag. We're going to lock it up, and you could take it when you leave.
One thing we forgot to note it.
What's that?
Note is that Justin is married now.
He is? Yeah. To whom?
Did he get married to Selena Gomez?
No, that was over a while. Oh, Haley Rode.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Good for him.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But
any rate, Shane Bieber.
But still, that guy was living the life for a while.
Yeah, speeding through Calabasas, Miami with his cars.
And you know what else? If he does ever end up getting a divorce, and I hope not, I wish him, he and his wife, a happy life. But if he ever does get a divorce, somebody will slide right in. He'll be okay.
I think so. Did you see the Twitter beef between the Marlins and Rays?
Somebody got fired.
Did they?
I think so.
Well, that's not fair.
The Marlins released a statement saying that it has been handled internally. But I think it's awesome if you want to tell the people what took place.
It is. It was spectacular. So the Marlins got swept, but they showed a video highlight of one of their great defensive plays. And Miami said, he's the man. Your third base coach warned you about it. It was a great throw from the outfield to get a Rays runner at the plate. Tampa says, show the final out. Miami responds, can't hear you. Must be the Maple Leafs crunching, speaking of the move of the Rays eventually to Montreal. Tampa, here's the broom we just used on you so you can clean them up. And Miami says, you're literally the animal that killed Steve Irwin off. Log off.
So anyway, somebody must have complained about it because the team felt like they had to do something about it, and they did release a statement earlier today and say that it was inappropriate. They shouldn't have done that. It has been handled internally. I take that to mean somebody's been fired. Some poor social media person has been fired. But that is awesome. It's true.
Literally the animal that killed Steve Irwin. Log off.
It's awesome.
It is. It's great.
I think 97% of people who read that thought it was amazing.
It was hilarious.
It is true, though.
Yeah.
He didn't die from messing around with Crocs. died because of a ray poked him in the chest.
Yeah. And I just got the Marlins statement. This was a regrettable exchange by our otherwise creative social media team. Unfortunately, in this medium, sometimes we swing and miss, and this was definitely a miss. And says the matter has been addressed internally.
Yep.
I don't think that's a miss at all. I think it's hilarious.
I think it is absolutely hysterical. That's good comedy right there.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I can't feel too bad for Steve Irwin. When you're screwing with wild animals for as long as he did, at some point somebody's going to get you, right?
Yeah, at some point.
And I appreciate he cared for the animals and he was doing something really good. But when you're getting up that close to them, and you know you're messing with them, at some point your luck's going to run out.
Right. Now, one other thing, it's not easy to get Chris Ranji upset. As you can tell, he's a happy, jovial guy. But last week, KSDK released a story with some of the complaints filed to the FCC after the Blues Game 7 on-ice celebration. Here are some of the comments. Many F-words were said. That's a complaint filed by someone in Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Freak?
No, F-words. No. One of your favorite words. NBC once again allowed at least 10 F-bombs clearly audible, a few loudly, during the primetime coverage of the 2019 Stanley Cup Final on Wednesday, June 12th. Federal law prohibits obscene, indecent, and profane content from being broadcast on the radio or TV. Enforce this law, levy hefty fines, and make them public to ensure future compliance, or this deliberate, disgusting show never ends. Complaint filed by someone in Lombard, Illinois.
You know where Lombard is?
Near Chicago?
It is a suburb of Chicago.
There you go.
So that's from a Blackhawks fan just trying to get somebody in trouble.
Yep. Another one. During the postgame show of the Stanley Cup on NBC, the network broadcast numerous instances of hockey players and even training staff screaming the word blank. I was absolutely horrified by hearing these terrible words from professionals. There were also a couple of middle fingers from the stands. I had to take a shower after hearing these foul words because I felt so dirty and violated. The NHL needs to make sure that its players act in a manner that is respectful of law enforcement, respectful of decency, and promotes respectful treatment of women, similar to the NFL and how all of their players act.
Okay, that's from somebody in California.
Yeah.
All right. There's no way that's serious.
You wouldn't think so.
I honest to God believe they filed this. That entire paragraph is a joke. And I'm not saying like, hey, that's a joke. I'm saying I think that person filed it thinking they were being funny.
Perhaps.
They should promote respectful treatment of women similar to the NFL and how all of their players act. You know, this person was being funny on purpose.
Yeah. So I hope those people haven't seen movies like The Town or The Departed.
Oh, no.
Don't watch an R-rated movie. You've got a problem if you're going to be offended by that word.
I was absolutely horrified.
I had to take a shower.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pretty
I was
funny.
Absolutely horrified. I'm horrified.
There you go.
No problem with that.
Not at
Keep
all.
Them coming, Benny. Yeah.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. And once again, use the mic drop feature. We want to hear from you later in the show. Our game is called Two Nice Things. You can say anything you want about the Cardinals, about Marp, about Fowler, about Schilt, about Moe, but you have to say two nice things about the team, too. And you have 30 seconds to do it.
Okay.
So, use the mic drop feature with the 101 ESPN app.
I believe in our listeners. I'm sure they've got plenty.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, yesterday I went to Columbia for Mizzou practice. Barry Odom and his Tigers are getting ready for 2019. One thing was clear. Odom's team is on the rise. That's next on 101 ESPN. That's Mizzou head football coach Barry Odom at SEC Media Days last month. And Ron's camp has started. The first Tigers practice was on Friday. So yesterday was their third practice and their first in full pads. And a couple of things that are notable about Mizzou, and I have been down on Barry Odom in the past. Number one, Coach Venturi always used to talk about how when you saw the Baltimore Ravens come out of the tunnel, you knew what a Baltimore Raven looked at like. That's the case with Mizzou now. When you see their linemen, you know what a Mizzou lineman looks like on both sides of the ball. The defensive linemen, the ends are tall, angular, and athletic. The defensive tackles are all in that 6'4", 6'5", range and between 300 pounds and 315. And almost every offensive lineman is between 6'4 and 6'7 and about 330 to 340 pounds. You know what they look like. They look like an offensive line that can maul. There were only three teams in major college football last year that averaged 200 yards on the ground and at least 219 yards through the air. And two of those were Oklahoma and Clemson. The other one was the University of Missouri. They're bringing back a lot of guys, 13 starters. And I'm pretty confident, especially because they don't play Georgia early, that they can be pretty good.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're a favorite in the conference by any means.
No.
Because you're still dealing with Alabama, Georgia, and LSU is going to be a whole lot better this year as well. But what I do expect realistically from Mizzou is to get off to a better start. Let's get off to a better mm-hmm. start this season. Let's not struggle early in games that you should win easily. Let's do this quickly out of the gate, because I really do think this could be a 9 or 10 win team. And you've got people who cover the team closely who feel that it could go from, you know, like 8 wins to 10 wins, that this could be a really, really good team.
They should be favored in their first 8. They have a chance to be 8-0 heading into that game at Georgia on November 2nd. It is also interesting because we all focus on the quarterback, and Kelly Bryant is not only a guy that has that pedigree of playing in a national championship game a couple of years ago. He's a guy that clearly has a lot of fun and brings the rest of the team along with him. They're having fun in practice, and it's not drudgery for him. He just loves playing the game and loves practicing the game, and he's a perfectionist. And you want that out of your quarterback. When he misses a pass, you can tell that he's frustrated.
Yeah, and he did, by the way, go down in practice today with a hamstring issue, and he apparently walked gingerly to the medical tent. Barry Odom afterwards said he still thought he was going to be okay. I think they had a couple of players who had some issues today as well. Their defensive end, Jordan Elliott, went down as well. But he does hope they're all going to be okay, and I hope that's the case, especially for Bryant, who they're probably going to ask to run a little bit too. You want him to have his legs as healthy as possible, because I'd imagine, even though they've got a good throwing quarterback now, which, I mean, they had one before as well, but they have somebody who can do things. He can either run the ball, he can throw. You want to be able to utilize both of his abilities, right? So as long as his legs are good, they should be okay.
And we're going to hear from Trevor Wallace-Sims, the East St. Louis offensive lineman, later on in the show. But I did ask him, what should we expect from the offense? And he said, I'm not giving away any secrets.
Right.
But I think it's pretty obvious. Last year, Drew Locke ran the ball 55 times for 175 yards. He's not a big runner anyway.
Right.
But in the full season that Kelly Bryant played at Clemson, he ran at 192 for Bryant, 55 for Locke, and he ran it for 665 yards. The Mizzou coaching staff, and specifically Derek Dooley, the offensive coordinator, they'd be foolish not to utilize that weapon that they have in Bryant. And that can turn them into even more of a massive running threat.
And you do just have to hope that he's not hampered. I mean, that's all it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And I know hamstrings can be, that's the kind of thing that can linger. So hopefully whatever happened today in practice is minor, because apparently it wasn't a contact thing. He just sort of went down. I obviously didn't see it. So hopefully he will be okay.
The other nice thing offensively about Mizzou is that Albert O will go into the season as one of the top tight ends in the country. He was highly productive when healthy last year. And even though they lost a couple of receivers, most notably Emmanuel Hall, who they didn't have for a lot of last year anyway, they still have that great tight end, and that's the kind of guy, that's the sort of offense that Kelly Bryant will thrive in, where the tight end is the main target.
And it's unfortunate that we're talking about these guys, because he had a bit of a knee issue today, too, and had to stop practice. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that does happen when you really start to get into practice and you're starting with all the reps. I think a lot of their success this year, obviously, and this is true for any team, is going to be based on their health. If they can stay healthy, if these top guys can stay as healthy as possible, they should be in really good shape throughout the year.
One other interesting note about this club defensively is that they're going to play a 4-2-5. They're going to go with five defensive backs now because of the proliferation of spread offenses in college football. So they're going to have three safeties back there. And I'm intrigued to see how that works. And if going into certain games, they decide just to have three pass-protecting guys back there, they'll get pass rush from their defensive line. But with the way the sport is now, that makes sense to me.
If you look at this All right. So obviously the SEC is the class of college football. When they go up against the teams like Alabama, I mean, you're not really expecting anything to happen there against them. But realistically, within the conference, where do you think they stand?
I believe that there are four teams, and you mentioned three of them. I'm going to throw Florida into the
Florida's mix. Gotten better.
And by
too,
the way, yeah. Texas A&M is going to be a bear with Jimbo Fisher there. So you've got those five elite programs, and then you've got Vandy at the bottom. And I throw Mizzou into the mix with all the rest, with the Tennessees and Kentuckys, with the Mississippis and Mississippi States. I think that's where Mizzou is. And in any given year, they're capable of being at the top of that group. But I would say that Alabama and Georgia are the class of the league. And then even though LSU was down last year, on an annual basis, you're going to have LSU, you're going to have Florida, you're going to have A&M. And then of the other nine teams, Vandy at the bottom, and then I think there's a group of eight, and I think Missouri is right there.
And you were talking about being favored in the first eight games of the season. They're going to start with Wyoming.
Yep.
That should be a win. West Virginia should be.
And that starts five straight home games, right? The West Virginia game?
Let's see. West Virginia is, yes, in Columbia, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row. Right. So West Virginia at home. SEMO, that should be, they should
score
roll
70.
Them, yeah. South Carolina should be favored at home. Troy, that should be another
hands
one
full.
Of those.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Ole Miss, that'll be the homecoming game at home. So you do. I mean, you very easily should be 6-0 to start the season.
And then who are the next two after that? You've got Kentucky and
Vandy and Kentucky
on the road.
So really, the first game that you're probably not favored in is Georgia in November.
Yeah. And Kentucky was really good last year. They lost a lot, but they have a chance under Mike Stoops to be really good. But I could see Missouri conceivably being 8-0 going into that Georgia game.
Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas. Those are your final games of the season.
And one thing I wrote today in my blog, while Mizzou has the week off before that game at Georgia, Georgia plays their biggest rival. They play Florida in the world's biggest cocktail
Uh-oh.
Party.
Yeah. Let down, Georgia.
Yeah, it could be very easily. So you can read the piece. I have it up at 101ESPN.com. And later on in the program, we'll hear some of the interviews that I did. I talked to, obviously, Barry Odom, but Kelly Bryant and the St. Louis, East St. Louis native, Trevor Wallace Sims as well. And we'll hear from them later on in the show. But right now, we've got a new fighter coming your way in the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.